Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to State of the Empire, the Star Wars speculation podcast where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
In this episode, we're talking all about Solo. The new film is finally out, and yes, this episode is going to be predominantly spoilerific. However, there are some news items that we simply must discuss off the top right here and now. We're going to have a very small spoiler-free section, and then after that, we're going to open our spoiler-proof blast doors wide and talk freely about the film. Now, in our prior episode, we did have some Solo content behind the blast doors. Well, we spoke to Mike Rothman and Matt Gerber from Consequence of Sound, who got to go to an early screening of Solo. They gave us a spoiler-free review, and then Matt and I went behind the blast doors to get all the juicy goodies and figure out the lay of the land for that film. In this episode, we're going to be giving you our full core State of the Empire trio of opinions here. But in the prior episode, we also addressed the longstanding rumors of the Obi-Wan Kenobi film, and we're outright able to confirm it based on some leaks that have been circulating. Now, that has been doubly confirmed by TMZ. They acquired what they said was a production bulletin, which is apparently different from what was acquired by the unnamed leak source, but confirmed leak source from the other thing. It's officially called Obi-Wan, A Star Wars Story, with the working title of Joshua Tree to conceal it. No, not conceal anymore. And apparently there was a synopsis, which they have, I guess someone told to them or something, and then TMZ has cheekily adapted. And here's what was written in their article. Obi-Wan is on Tatooine being an elusive hermit and stuff, but secretly watches over an infant Luke Skywalker, whom he delivered to his uncle Owen. Tensions between the local farmers and a tribe of sand people, headed by a ruthless war chief, eventually bring Obi out of hiding and into Jedi kick-ass mode. Stephen Daldry is still being discussed as the director of that. Interesting thing. It is Obi-Wan, A Star Wars Story, and now is time for us to, as we actually don't often do, eat our words. We're wrong.
Oh yeah, there's reasons that we'll get into behind the blast doors about why I'm walking back from that they're going to be getting rid of A Star Wars Story.
Yeah,
that I've been claiming.
If this is just your first time tuning in, we did recently believe, based on the production troubles associated with Rogue One and also Solo, and the announcements that were all in regards to various trilogies or ongoing series of films and so on, that Disney was done with a la carte films. And they hadn't announced anything. They still haven't officially announced Obi-Wan.
Done for now in order to separate themselves from the A Star Wars Story line of films.
Right, that it would just be like, well, it was an experiment, we kind of botched it, so let's stick with trilogies. But that actually, I mean, clearly what they've done is they've taken it behind their blast doors and hidden all this stuff away, cleaned up their house, because certainly, definitively, by trial and error, something was wrong with the way they were organizing these productions. They were clearly doing something that was not working. So they've, I guess, fixed that as well as they believe they can, and are now on the verge of announcing Obi-Wan Kenobi and, late breaking, the same, like, in tandem to Solo hitting theaters, there is a new Star Wars story in town. This comes direct from Hollywood Reporter. Matt, you want to take the floor on this one?
Yeah, it's being reported by Hollywood Reporter as an exclusive that they are currently working on a Boba Fett film written and directed by James Mangold. So, you know,
as in Logan, 310 to Yuma?
Yeah.
Mangold.
And it's strange because the Mangold movie is what I think everybody wants from the Obi-Wan film. We don't actually want Mangold on it because that would probably be too familiar. But, you know, Boba Fett's probably a good place if you still want that talent, but direct it somewhere else.
And, of course, this would be a time where we're like, it makes sense that there's a Boba Fett movie. And it's total, like, marketing. It's a dream come true. Everyone always wanted more Boba. Now's the time for Boba Fett and all the respective Boba Tea tie-ins at various fast food restaurants.
And behind the blast doors, we'll talk about why this now makes more sense.
A lot of sense. But that said, you know, we could be like, yeah, but you know, it's going to be stupid. But hey, here's the thing.
I thought Han Solo was going to be stupid.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Han Solo should have been a steaming turd, and against all odds, it is, for my personal spoiler-free review, among the four best Star Wars films ever made.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I loved it. I mean, I can, like every Star Wars film, I could sit here and pick some nits and, like, you know, have an right. entire farm of nits to pick, but like
you're a scruffy nitpicker.
But as far as just a movie as a whole, and you know, characters and acting and having fun, and also learning how these, you know, characters that we know grow, like this is one of the more successful prequels that's ever been made, at least for my money. Like prequels are a hard thing. Like when you go overall list of like great prequels, like there's probably only one great one, like Godfather Part Two. Like,
right.
That might be the only great
one. Is it even
one.
Really a prequel though? Like
only
half of it?
Only half the movie is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not an easy thing to do well. And I have to say they did it really well.
Yeah.
They nailed it.
Because it wasn't really a prequel. It's just, you know what I mean?
It's a standalone movie that serves to inform other films if you want it to.
Right.
But I mean, this is a film with a wide array of main characters. I feel like it's a sci-fi, a set in, like, you know, the different funky reaches of space. One of the only movies I could compare it to is The Fifth Element. And that's always a good move. If you can make that comparison, it's probably an okay movie.
It was like a slightly more serious and darker Guardians of the Galaxy that takes place in Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Which is like, that sounds awesome.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Doug, you were easily among the harshest critics of all of us. All of us were quite harsh in the development of this picture.
Oh, yeah. When they first announced it was going to be Solo, I was just like, all right, you know.
We're doomed.
Yeah, we're doomed. It's going to be just all this ham-fisted fan service, and because it's the one name that everyone knows,
or
Han Solo.
Han-fisted.
Yeah, Han. It's Han. I have to say, like, without going into the spoilers, yeah, I was really relieved that there wasn't as much, you know, really lame fan service as I was expecting. In fact, I wouldn't even say that any of it was, like, lame. Like, it was just, it was fine. It was good.
Yeah.
There was so much. There's like 99% of this movie is like a great fun time, and that 1% is like, yeah, I could have done without that, but it doesn't ruin the movie.
This is
fine.
An achievement in expanded universe vibes on the screen. There's never been anything like this before. This is so Star Wars. This is a Star Wars novel and/or comic book committed to live action.
It every step of the way should not have worked. Like it's kind of this is like the perfect. It's like it's almost like this meta commentary on Han Solo the character. You're like, this should, no, he's not getting away with this. There's no way this should work. He's not getting out of this. There's no way he's getting out of this.
It's fine.
And he fucking pulls it
We're
off.
We're fine.
Like, yeah. I don't know how. Like, and I'm sure just like the Empire or Jabba or anyone, how does Han Solo keep getting away with it? You know, like there's no explanation.
And the weird thing, you know, my chief concern going into this movie was that it was going to misinform the character that we meet in A New Hope. Like, it wasn't going to make sense transitioning.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He was going to be, you know, too good or too bad or whatever it was going to be, and it wasn't going to make sense when I met him in A New Hope.
Yeah.
And yet somehow this movie hits on the good side of Han and the scoundrel side and, like, really leaves him in, like, the right spot for A New Hope.
Let's just hope that they don't do what they did with, like, the Star Trek reboots. Where it's like when that first Star Trek reboot ended, it was like, oh yeah, they're like in the great spot to now they can go on these adventures. And then the second one was just a remake of the first one. And it was like the same problems are getting over again. So if and when they make another Han Solo one, I just want to see the next step. I don't want a repeat of this one because this is great. I like this one.
Yep.
But it's going to be tricky to see what they can pull off. But yeah, as far as the first one goes for establishing, like, oh, he's not... I was just so worried they were going to end it with him walking into the bar on Tatooine and being like, who's that old wizard looking guy? Chewie, go check him out. You know, like, but it totally doesn't do that. I was so relieved. That's all I can just say without going into more spoilers.
Also, mad props to Ron Howard. This is like, it is classic Ron Howard. We had a
strong
quote.
Willow vibes.
Yes, strong. We had a quote from him earlier in the prior episode talking about how, doing certain sequences reminded him of all the work he did with Mad Mardigan. Yeah, you can compare a lot of this film's vibe, the success of this film, to the
fucking Corellian Hounds. I know. But that's just like serendipity.
Yeah, this film has that same Willow vibe of comedy, action, drama, creative set pieces in terms of like the action and the sequences. It's all there. Mm-hmm. Everything that you love about Willow is also in this movie, probably.
Yeah, I could see that. I would agree to that.
So
I would absolutely agree to that.
Unless you were looking for like swords and, you know.
There are swords.
Technically. It's not I mean more like sword and sorcery, you know, more of that fantasy, you know.
Yeah, we'll leave the sorcery for the mainline Star Wars films.
Yeah, yeah.
We got some dates. Star Wars Celebration is coming to Chicago in 2019, April 11th through 15th. That happens to be Consequence of Sound's home base, so you can bet your asteroids we're going to be there. Then, Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars theme park at Disneyland and Disney World, two separate dates. Disneyland, summer 2019. Disney World, late fall 2019. The official description of this event, the space, everything about it, well, it sort of solidifies a few things that we've known definitively or have long suspected. Here it is. The first of its kind resort will combine luxury with complete immersion into authentic Star Wars story. Guests' journey through space will start when everyone departs together for a multi-day Star Wars adventure by boarding a starship alive with characters and stories that unfold all around them during a voyage through the galaxy. At the resort, guests immediately become active citizens of the galaxy and can dress up in the proper attire. Every resort window will also have a view into space. The opportunity for immersion at this resort will also stand out among all Disney resorts around the globe, as it will be seamlessly connected to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge at Disney's Hollywood Studios, allowing guests a total Star Wars experience.
I don't know.
Yeah, not only am I skeptical, but quite frankly, I'd rather spend my time at the resort. Like, that, to me, like, I feel like my immersion will be less broken at the resort.
If you're at the resort, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, how are you gonna get the people in the babies in the strollers wearing Star Wars shit?
Well, what I think is going to happen is it's not going to be a luxury starship that you're on at the resort. It's going to be the like refugee cruiser that like Padme and Anakin were on in Attack of Clones, and they're just going to make you wear basic just ponchos and, you know, very cheap articles of clothing in order to have.
There's
the
going to be so many people who don't speak English. Like, no, I want the Star Wars experience.
Yeah, perfect,
like,
great.
And,
perfect.
No, but like, and they're gonna pay money, and they're like, I'm not wearing that. You know, like, there's too many dicks in this world that would ruin it just because they're important. They're more important than you.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's the same way that it can't be a complete Potter experience at Wizarding World.
But it doesn't claim to be or strive to be.
It doesn't, and they do a great job despite it. But yeah. I can't. I mean, Disney can always, you know, prove me wrong. And
oh, I hope they do.
I hope they
Please
do.
Please prove me wrong.
But when they tell me that they're going to have, you know, scripted events happen in the parks,
yeah,
like,
I don't know about that.
Like citizens being arrested by stormtroopers and stuff, I just, it's not going to happen. There's no way. It's going to be so crowded. It's going to be.
It'll go for like a month, and then they say, no, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, we shall see. If you do want to literally see something, a digital composite, there is a trailer which showcases Batuu in more glory than the average person on the internet has been able to see outside of having gone to, say, D23 or one of these Disney shareholder events. Mm. So we'll link to that trailer on this episode's page. So you guys want to go behind the blast doors?
Open the blast doors! Open the blast doors!
All right. So Matt and I knew about Darth Maul.
I could tell that you knew something because you're like, oh, there's going to be a cameo and so, Doug might, you know,
how'd you feel about that?
I'm very torn because on one hand, it's awesome that he's in it and that it's like seeing him alive, like in a way that's on screen, which is cool. And it's sort of like, how do I put it? Like very vindication, you know, like that it was like, no, it's valid. We're going to make it good. And we took in these other mediums, we took Darth Maul and made him cool and interesting. And this validates all of that.
Sam Witwer.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Ray Park with Sam Witwer voicing.
Shit.
Yeah.
No
and
shit.
So once again, you know, we're walking back from what we were saying a couple months ago, which, you know, it's I'm happy to eat my words here.
Oh yeah, this is incredible.
You know, I'm not going to complain about this. Yeah. It's like, but that transmedia disrespect that we've been talking about for so long,
right?
It may not be true. I mean, it stands to reason, you know, that things could go wildly from here with Darth Maul.
Yeah.
In relation to like how he was finished up on Rebels, and also where he's portrayed at the end of his Clone Wars arc.
Yeah.
And then where we see him in Rebels, like
since we had this Maul thing confirmed for us by Mike and Mac, Matt and I have been talking about it quite a bit because it's still continuity wise confusing at best.
Yep.
But it is a big blank window, and if they can make it work, more power to them, because it just makes it feel
on the other side of the coin of like oh, it's so cool to see that, it's so cool to have it tied in and to see him there, and I don't know, like on the other side, it's like I feel like this could have been anyone. Like it didn't have
it could
to be
have.
Maul, and it was like it was just needless, but it didn't. It's not.
Part
it's not,
of me wonders if it was the executives being like, okay, we can't do another movie without a lightsaber in there.
I know, and it's like the on one hand, it's completely unnecessary. It doesn't detract from the movie for me like at all, with the exception of. He's there. He's talking. I'm like, oh, this is cool. He stands up. Robot legs. Oh, I'm fine with this. This is cool. And then for no reason, he pulls out a lightsaber. I'm like, don't turn on the lightsaber, please.
I think he was being a little threatening to Kira.
I get why in story he's
right,
doing that.
Right.
But as a filmmaker, it's just like, why do we have to see him do this? It's like, and I know, the answer is because, well, people are going to wonder if it's actually him. Well,
that's
because
as I was walking out of the theater, someone said, so was that Darth Maul or was that another Darth Maul?
Right.
And a lot of people are wondering if this takes place before Phantom Menace, completely discounting
people,
the fact that the Empire is everywhere.
You got to realize people aren't going to understand. It doesn't matter.
I know.
You can never answer enough. You can never show enough shit for people to say, oh, I know what that is now. Like, it'll never happen. But that all being said, it was fun. I really want to know where they're going to take this now, like with this character, because it's like all they've done is set up more expectations, which are going to come crashing down eventually.
No, I mean, I guess what I love about it is the as we were saying, the transmedia respect, like for the first time, like myself as a, you know, Legends, EU, like books, comics, like obsessed person, I can finally say like, oh, you're interested in that? How did that happen? Like, I thought he died in Phantom Menace. Like, oh, check out this comic and this TV show and then maybe read this book and, you know, that sort of thing. Like, it isn't just like, okay, that reference, I, you know, read this comic. It's now like, if you want the details of plot, you need to go to these books and comics, which is cool. But at the same time, what I don't like about it, I think, is it's the talking point of this movie now amongst fans who have seen the movie.
Right, right.
Like, we saw a great movie, and the internet, from among those that have seen it, everybody's talking about Maul.
Yeah, like...
I'm sorry for bringing it up first and foremost, but it's just...
Oh, no,
I mean,
it is. It's the thing that you have to acknowledge it first.
Yeah, we got the Sith in the room talk about.
Because it's such a... You never would have expected in a million years. If you said, like, hey, so who's going to guest in this movie? I never... ever
no I had
would have ever said
I
that.
Had 10 people I would have guessed would have been the cameo at the end of this movie before you get to Darth Maul. Like, I don't think I ever would have guessed Darth Maul, because what right does he have to be in a Han Solo movie,
right?
You know, so
and once again, if you want the reason why it makes sense, this comic and this book, and you know, like, it does make sense, but
I'll take your word on it for that, because that's not the thing that about it that upset me. Is like, well, where does he belong? I don't care, it's fine. It's just that it could have been anybody. Like, it was just a plug-in.
No, I know, it's just this movie was so focused on the crime syndicates, and especially the Pikes, which were in Clone Wars and was actually part of Darth Maul's like shadow collective, like unified crime syndicate, along with like Mandalorian Death Watch and a couple other like entities, I think the Hutts too. So, you know, it didn't necessarily have to go that direction, but that was the world they were playing in.
Right.
And then brought Darth Maul. But once again, what's confusing right now is, as of Son of Dathomir, he's no longer part of that empire. But I guess at some point he gets re-involved.
It's weird that your instinct was, oh, this is like a positive way to show that they're tying into the, you know, other media, right. You know, like, whereas I thought the opposite, which is like, oh, they're going to ignore everything because of the response they're going to get from this. People are going to get so excited. They want to see him in the next movie. They go, oh shit. Well, according to the timeline we had already established, Darth Maul shouldn't be doing X, Y, Z during the second Han Solo movie. He should be doing whatever, but they're going to ignore it because the movies are going to, it's just going to revert back to what it was before, where the movies are main canon. Then you get a tertiary canon, and then you get Legends, and then you get fucking the Christmas holiday special.
On the last episode, Behind the Blast Doors, Mike and Mac, they were super excited by the Kenobi rumors because, like, oh, we're going to see Kenobi and Maul fight in the Kenobi spinoff.
And both of us were like, we're not.
We've done that. Like, we've already seen Kenobi and Maul have their final showdown.
I know.
And it's beautifully done.
And it's great. If it's the story, it's a great payoff. Good character moments there.
Yeah.
But you know,
but once again, if that's where the movie trajectory is taking us, that like Maul is now this like, he's the weird during the lawless period that this movie helps, you know, set up or inform us that, you know, the early Empire was like, if Maul is that sort of, you know, third party Shizor type bad guy,
yeah,
he might just be the connective tissue for all these movies. And then eventually, yeah, we probably will get his demise in an Obi-Wan movie that supersedes Rebels, which would be terrible. But
I don't know. I'm so torn on that though, because like
I don't want it to happen.
Yeah, well, it's like I don't want it to happen, but at the same time, it's like I want to see more of him.
Right.
I don't. You know, and I hate the idea that they're gonna say do away with a unified canon, but I don't know how else you can't keep going.
I think that the thing that makes this show different is that we all know there's a possibility of that. But we're not going to necessarily, I mean, we're not committing to that. This is not broken continuity yet. And we know that there's all kinds of ways we can be surprised.
Sure,
and
sure, also, sure.
And to bring it, like, the reason why I think Cap and I are hopeful that it won't break that continuity is because Solo, this movie, pays so much respect and deference to Legends.
But will the next
reference
one?
And
like, you know, like, I mean, yeah, but
as dude, here's the thing. I feel like John Kasdan had a fucking blast in here, and most mm-hmm. of the stuff that we think is coolest about this movie is probably his doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's turning into Star Wars mainstay writer. That's I think.
Sure.
Cool. Yeah. As we were talking about with the Boba Fett film with Mangold, I mean, one, he's earned the right, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense, but if he wants to tell a story in which, you know, he wants to put Maul in the Boba Fett film, which he probably will, I'm sure Maul will be the, you know, the Shizor of this world, a setting, you know,
scum and villainy world before the classic trilogy.
Right. And, you know, so who knows what James Mangold wants to do with Darth Maul. And then when Stephen Daldry comes on board for the Obi-Wan film, you know, if they want Maul and Kenobi to meet, because I have a feeling this Maul thing is going to be like a big hit. Like, I noticed he wasn't credited as Darth Maul in the credits, just Maul, which is cool. I think it's going to be a big hit with the fans and, you know, those that aren't as, you know, tuned into Rebels, you know, they want that Obi-Wan Maul showdown. And, you know, we're probably, unfortunately, going to get
it. That's what I'm saying. Like, as long, because they're stoking the flames for fans to say, I want a showdown, especially with an upcoming Obi-Wan movie. You can't tell them, well, it already happened in a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, no, I don't, but I'm not going to watch that.
Oh, and Darth Maul was put down like a dog.
Yeah. Very beautifully, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though everything, the reason why he's there, how he got there, how he found him is great.
Yeah.
And now I worry that they're going to, because they showed him in live action again.
I've seen many references or many comparisons to online to people saying Maul showed up like Thanos in the first Avengers film, you know, do it myself. And then they waited like, you know, 20 more movies before he did it himself. But, you know,
but they've set up a question that's never going to have a payoff unless you go and watch Rebels.
Right. And
not everyone's going to go do that.
But yeah. You really should though.
Yeah. You should.
You should. Yeah. But I will probably spend the next, you know, 3-4 years going back and forth on whether or not they're actually going to.
Yeah. So I do actually do regret jumping right into Maul because there's so much to love about Solo.
I'll tell you the same thing I told both of you when we were leaving the theater. It's just like, yeah, mixed feelings about it. I overall like Darth Maul, but you know what? I'll accept Darth Maul because you already gave me Taras Kazi.
Yes, this movie was resplendent with things that just tapped into the bigger world of Star Wars. And is it fan service? Yeah, it's fan service, but it's all done really organically. It's just like every, like how in the original trilogy, it was so, they would often so casually mention things in the world. And in this case, some of these things have been prior established and confirm older stories are still true or a certain kind of true. And it's beautiful. It's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Lando casually mentions all three of his Lando Calrissian Adventures novellas, and no one stops him to say, oh, what is that? You know, it's a very organic, you know, he's dropping it because he experienced it, and, you know, no one necessarily wants him to recollect it at that moment. You know, it's all very organic and informed by the world in which this movie takes place in, which I think is the most important part of getting fan service. And I hate that term because it's true and it's sometimes cringeworthy. Like, it's the most important way to get it right is to make sure that's informed by the world that it's
This was less cringeworthy than Rogue One as far as fan service goes. I feel like half the things that, like, Rogue One, it's like they shoved in 3PO and R2, and I was worried they were going to do it in this one. And that one's just like, I like 3PO and R2, but you just put them there. And it was on the Ponababa. I was like,
Yeah, but instead, both those instances in Rogue One made me just like, it felt dirty afterwards. Like,
yeah.
Nothing even remotely like that in this
film. Yeah, here it was like Tereskazi, I flipped my shit, you know, and they said, Beckett, you're Beckett. You killed, what's her name?
Aura Singh.
Aura Singh. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, holy cow.
And it's weird how I wasn't like, I clap because I know what it is. It was more of like, oh, shit, they're telling me that this guy killed her. Now I'm scared of this guy.
Yeah.
Like, it actually was informative. It wasn't just, hey, remember that thing?
This guy's like, I mean, we've seen him be a gunslinger, but like, oh, man, it's not all show. He's a real threat. Like, we know he killed a known character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, has expanded adventures in the Clone Wars.
Yes, so, exactly.
Like, you know, we've seen how threatening and imposing she is. And when they casually mention, like, they should have hired Bosk for this train job.
Right. Or the Zan sisters.
Or the Zan sisters. Yeah. And Bosk participated in a train job in Clone Wars. So it wasn't simply like, oh, just drop Bosk's name. It's like, no, drop the name of
a guy who would do that. Yeah.
Who has had experience doing something that they're involved in. Like, all these types of references are very, like, they're natural because they're well
in a bigger
researched.
World. Yeah. Yes. It is truly connected in a way that's organic and fulfilling. And yeah, it does hit all the fucking marks for like everything you'd ever want to see in terms of like Bob Iger being like everything you'd ever want to see for Han Solo.
Yeah, it's like how he got his blaster, how he got the Falcon.
Chewie pulls
he got
off
to
some
meet
arms.
Chewie.
It's like, you know, I was worried because it started to fill all those checkboxes.
Yep.
That I was like, oh no, it's gonna end with them going to the cantina and shit. But they didn't.
Yep.
You know, and I was, it's like, I want to know how much of that was mandated with, you know, the first directors, and then how much of that is Ron Howard coming in and saying, no, we get, that's what the fans want, give them that. Like, I don't know. We're never gonna know, but like,
there was a fun one that I don't think we've discussed. Have we? The Holo Chess board? Did we discuss this?
What about it?
We did not discuss it. I mean, it's there.
So there is a, and we'd have to do the research, but there was a figure for the Dejarik board that wasn't used in the original New Hope, but it's like kind of part of production diaries. It's like a well-known, like, oh, this monster wasn't used. And in this movie, it's on the board when Chewie's playing Beckett, and when Chewie slams the board in frustration, it winks out and it's broken, like it's gone forever.
Huh.
Chewie broke that.
I noticed.
Creature.
I noticed that it disappeared, but I didn't realize there was significance.
And that's
wow.
That's the, you know, the reason why it wasn't in A New Hope. It's just little things like that. It's, I don't know.
I mean, that's not even like fan service. That's Easter egg material, right?
Yeah,
there.
And that's the thing we're gushing about right now. We're just gushing about fan service and Easter eggs. But that wasn't even necessarily the best part of the movie.
Yeah, the movie works. It's like we're talking about these little tiny things, but overall, the movie fucking works.
It's
like
a journey. It's an adventure. I never really knew what was going to happen with Han as a character.
Yeah.
He was charming. He was delightful. Alden Ehrenreich knocked it out the park. Yes. He was such a sweet boy getting in dirty places.
Think of how much better this movie would have been if they just had an impersonator.
Oh, no, they did. And his name is Donald Glover. I'm sorry, but like, everyone else was pulling their A game here, and he had some charming moments, but I feel like half the time he was on the screen, he was just doing a bad impression.
Really?
Yeah.
I will say, I don't think the impression was bad. My problem was is he kept slipping out of it in some delivery. Some delivery is like, oh, you're just impersonating Billy Dee's voice. And then sometimes it was just, you know.
Sometimes it was organic. Sometimes it did feel very real. But then other times I'm like, is this just some weird affectation you're putting on? Are you giving me the impression that Lando Calrissian is just a weird mask that this guy wears? I mean, kind of, I suppose. But
maybe.
I don't know.
I didn't catch any of that.
I mean, everyone else's performance was so like genuine and real. And with him, like, I'm like, are you putting on airs as a character or are you putting on airs as an actor? And I can't tell.
I would say that is because I think because of the role and expectations of the role, because Lando is such a... Like, even more so than Han just being Harrison Ford, because, like, you know, he burst on the scene with that.
Mm-hmm.
Lando is just Billy Dee Williams in a Colt 45 commercial in space. You know, like, it's just, you know, like, so I think he felt more compelled to simply be Billy Dee. And also, I think a lot of the Lando stuff was part of the,
like,
the
an act.
Lord and Miller, like, cut up, you know, whatever they did. You know, I think he had a bigger role, and I think... Mm-hmm. The reason why the impression versus him doing his own thing is so inconsistent is because it's
two
the difference
versions
between
of the film.
Ron Howard's version and Lord
and
Miller.
And that's very possible. And there's all kinds of things that we've noticed. Matt, you've actually seen the film twice at this point. Mm-hmm. You got a chance to see it a little bit earlier than everybody else. And there are some unusual things. Nothing even remotely as broken as the aspects of Rogue One from its fixes. But
right.
But there's, you know, there's still some odd stuff, like when the Falcon's in the impound. That's handled very weirdly.
Yeah, I think that was, there was some sequence where, you know, the Falcon was in the impound in the Lord and Miller version. It was a lot more convoluted getting there. And then in the Ron Howard, you know, quicker paced version, it's just meet Lando and hire him. And then they're like, well, how do we get to those shots and scenes that we already did in the impound? So they did this weird thing where it's like, oh, there's a lot of ships getting boosted off this planet, so I'm hiding it in the impound.
See, I took that to only mean that he was bullshitting. That, like,
I took it as bullshit as well.
Yeah, that it's just like, yeah, maybe that is your ship, but clearly you're stuck on this planet because you either broke the law or you pissed someone off and your ship is now impounded, or maybe you already lost your ship to someone else and you're stealing it. I mean, that's how I took it. But who knows what they meant by
maybe.
It.
Well, and I think that could be the original intention as well, except that I feel like it wasn't lingered on in a way that actually sells it.
Right. I thought there was going to be, like there's going to be an answer later, like with, you know, Enfys, you know, putting the tracker on. I'm like, oh, did they put that there? Did they chain it down? Like, right. I thought they were going to say, but they didn't. And it was fine. I didn't care.
Yeah, there's some weird, you know, once again, I was talking about, like, I could nitpick logic things.
But then
lot,
why wouldn't
but...
they just put, wait. So we're saying, like, they Photoshop in Chewie. But they don't Photoshop out the chains.
But that's what I mean. Like,
you know, it's like.
But that's what my thing is maybe Chewie wasn't even part of the team at that point.
So what the guys are referencing right now is that they're in the earliest Solo trailers. There's two shots. One is Han and Kira walking across the desert to go see Beckett at this coast, and the other one is Han looking up at the Falcon. And in both those shots in the film and in later trailers, it's Han and Chewie looking up the Falcon and Chewie schlepping behind Han and Kira holding the two cases of coaxium. And so we don't know what's up with that, but we presume that it's due to those scenes being resequenced in terms of where they occur.
Right.
So I don't know. That's...
I mean, I think there's a lot of that band-aiding, just like, yeah. You know, resequencing events. And
maybe that can explain the discrepancies that you feel with Donald Glover's performance. But I always, literally, like, in the middle of it, when he started to get all emotional about, like, L3 and everything, I thought, oh, the whole part of him being like, everything you heard about me is true. Like, yeah, that's cool, and we like that, but maybe that's just all bullshit. Like, maybe it is a front. Like, maybe everything we heard about him is not true. You know, like, maybe it is that
maybe.
It's like...
Could be. He's a con man.
Yeah, he is.
I guess it didn't sell to
me. Yeah, yeah. But it worked on me.
I was on Emilia Clarke's case because I've not been a fan of hers so far. And I thought she was great as Kira. I think Kira is very nuanced. And I think it came across very well.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
And she is, like, you know, I've been harsh on Emilia Clarke not being capable of that sort of nuance. And I thought she did a great job in this
also,
movie.
Paul Bettany was fantastic.
Oh,
amazing.
And you were also expressing worry about Jon Favreau.
Yeah, and Rio Durant was great, and Val was great. Like, this movie, I mean, did such a great job building up characters that we just met to the point where I wanted to spend so much time with them, and then just got rid of some of them right away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, completely, like, that, you know, I don't want to compare this movie to Last Jedi, But that to me is subversion of expectations. Like, that's the kind of thing, you know, where, you know, do something.
Everything that happens in this movie had meaning. It all meant something and we felt something.
Right. And it's just, it's crazy. If anything, the biggest gripe I have about this movie, and is also something I absolutely love, this movie is relentless in its pacing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just continuously going. And I love that about the movie, is that it just never lets up. Like, we don't get a moment to really breathe too long. But at the same time, it's what I hate about the movie, because I want to spend a lot of time with these characters.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that conversation with you know, before the Conveyx heist was an hour long. Like, I loved all of them chatting together and letting me know what it's like to be a scoundrel in the Star Wars mm-hmm. universe. And
the scene with L3 and Kira was wonderful.
Yeah.
And any time the characters paused to have a moment like that was great. Which is such, I mean, just speaks to the strengths of everyone who made this film. And we'll probably, much like Rogue One, never get the story of what really did or didn't happen and the various ways that the plot twisted and turned. I mean, I'm actually surprised to see how many sources of possible differences in the two versions of the film we really encountered in this cut of it.
Yeah.
I didn't expect there would be that many seams. I wouldn't expect that. I mean, there's, okay, so something we haven't mentioned is the early Corellia sequences are amazing, and it seems just very, very likely that there was a lot more of it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems entirely possible that there was a lot more. I believe the shots of Han walking through the streets past the burnt out astromech droid people are using as like a fire bin, like mm-hmm. that's not in the movie, right?
Nope, I didn't say it.
I mean, that's just one shot, but there's they could have filmed like a whole at least part of an act there and not just like an introduction.
Well, because we were originally told they were going to skip through like three different timelines in Han's life. Here, there's only one jump. It's like he escapes Corellia and then it says 3 years later. And then the rest of the movie takes place within like the same week, or even less.
And
like,
the fact that there's so much of the scenes with Paul Bettany are so important to moving things through. I mean,
that's what people were.
He was not in the original version. That was not. So, wow.
Some people were worried when like Ron Howard came on board. They're like, Ron Howard, well, whatever. I'm like, no, this dude knows how to make a movie. Like, this dude knows how to sew it together.
You're definitely talking about us on this show.
Yeah. It's like,
I mean, I agree. Ron has made some fantastic films, but I was like, I don't know. I mean, it was a weird move, you know?
It's the recent track record, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that he got tied into that, the
Dan Brown?
Yeah, the Dan Brown franchise, mm-hmm.
Well, trying to adapt the books to whatever, whereas if you bring Ron Howard in, the movie's like 80% complete or 90%, depending on where you get your numbers, and they say, this is broken, how do you fix it? I'm pretty sure Ron Howard is a smart enough guy to know, oh, well, we remove that. Well, then we only have half a movie. Well, if we insert Paul Bettany here, then I'm pretty sure we can cover that.
You know what it was? It's the scene from Apollo 13. Kathleen Kennedy and Bob Iger.
Yeah, you got to put this into that.
It's like dump everything out on the table, and it's like this into that, and all we have is this.
Yeah.
Make it work.
Yeah, and I firmly believe that that's exactly why he was a great choice to do it.
And it was really just so much fun. And there really are a lot of, and I don't want to, like, Star Wars doesn't have to be so joyous, but this movie needed to be. And there are moments like the subtle stuff, you know, the first time he sees the Falcon go in the hyper, well, the first time he sees the Falcon was great, but then when they go to hyperspace for the first time and that perfect like pan over to him, like the smile creeping, and I'm like, the smile is matching for me.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, it's such good stuff.
And I did not, I mean, it wouldn't take a genius, but I was like, didn't I call it that when we saw Chewie and Han as a toy, they're chained together? I'm like, oh, let me guess, they're gonna throw Han in the cell and you're gonna hear the very much like Return of the Jedi, and then all of a sudden Chewie comes out, which was I thought his reveal being all covered in mud was like really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole fight, that was great. And
beautiful scene. Chewie's so well handled throughout the entire film.
Yeah, no, I love him. And the moment that I got like the fan chills, where I was like, oh shit, no, this is for real now, wasn't the Falcon, wasn't any of that. We were like, it was on Kessel after Chewie and him like split up, and after they'd already come back, and like whatever, and L3's shot, and Lando's whatever, and so Han goes after him, and then Chewie has to make the choice: do I go with these Wookiees or do I stick with Han? And then even when he made the choice, I'm like, this is cool, but when it had that shot of Chewie running to get him, I was like, oh fuck, it was like my heart.
The way I didn't think that they could improve on the history that had been provided about Han and Chewie's relationship, and when, you know, Han saved him from slavers, and in the original expanded universe, which was based on stuff that George said, that, you know, there was an imperial slaver whipping him, and he just, like, that's how he got kicked out of the academy, is he ended up like busting Chewie out because, you know, he couldn't stand watching him get tortured. But this movie is get rid of the life debt.
Yeah,
you know, just it's two people that like had, you know, eventually had a huge amount of respect for each other and what, you know, they were about, you know, on a value level.
You see why Chewie chose to stick with
him. Yeah, and it's such a better thing to
like
do.
Like, he had an out.
Like, they absolutely improved it. It was great.
Yeah. One thing that you guys reminded me of is I have most scenes, most set pieces in this film, I think, are really well done. The Convex film scene cannot be overstated. It's one of the best sequences in the film. It's one of the best sequences in Star Wars, period. It's so well handled. And there's a lot of great moments like that. The Kessel escape sequence, when it's in like the control room and the droids are walking around, that's great.
That was fun.
When they're running through the corridors and so on, that's great.
Yeah.
But when they get to the big courtyard and there's a big battle around the Falcon, there's cool shots. Like, I mean, like the way L3's death is handled was well done. The Lando and Han tossing the guns around, that's great. But the overall set piece is so dull and so boring and such a pickup shot. It's like it's just a set.
That
it's
was
a big.
That, we know that was literally Ron Howard's first day.
Yeah, I know.
So it's like they were probably already shot half of what they thought they needed, and then all right, we're taking a break for like a month or 2 months or however long.
It's just
was.
A shame because it's noticeable, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's the most noticeably plain, like safe.
That was the tipping point for. That passing the baton from these directors to this director.
Yeah.
Like, so it was definitely.
And, you know, strangely enough, you know, I'm a fan of the whole, you know, Star Wars uses practical sets again, and like they're the champion of using practical things. But in a weird way, this is where that suffers because it felt so small and such a stage and such a it's boring.
Well, because there's like, a giant ship that they're standing on.
Well, and
the
what
time.
Was made it extra noticeable is we were just in a sequence that had so many different facets going on, and then we get to this one thing that's such a soundstage, it may as well be on the set of, like, Hercules, The Legendary Journeys.
It is the downfall of the practical thing is that sequence should have been bigger. Like, it probably needed, like, some expansion.
It may have originally been. It may have originally been.
It may have been. But I'm just saying, like, that's where I think the practicality of it falls apart a little bit, where it wouldn't have minded some like digital expansion to try to like save that sequence a little bit, but you know,
not even save, just develop. I mean, like, it's fine, it's good, it's totally
it's
fine.
Awkward. I felt the first time I saw the movie, it felt very awkward, and I was actually like, one of my goals to see it the second time was to hone in on it to see what was up with it, and I had the same feelings again. Like,
I think
it gets weird
during that sequence and during the Convey X robbery. There was a little bit of shaky cam that I was like, where's what? And then, but only in briefest of passing, but it did throw me out for like a second.
Right.
And then be like, all right, now we're back in. So it was, I don't know how much of that is a direction thing or lack of whatever, but it was, I've never experienced that in a Star Wars movie. So that was strange.
Let's talk about some stuff that's missing that we know is in the film. So during the Ron Howard filming, that's when we got the word that Tag and Bink were in this movie. They're nowhere to be seen. We know that they were in Imperial officer uniforms. The only time that really comes into play is in the Coruscant sequences. Go fucking figure. And then also...
You mean Corellia?
Corellia, yeah, that's okay. What I meant, yes.
It's like, what did I miss?
Yes, Corellia. And then also the Arrestor Cruiser, the ship with the very awkward-looking early Star Destroyer draft.
You saw
ship.
It in the promo.
Yeah, it was in the movie.
It was. When it's like, join the Empire, save the galaxy.
It's in the propaganda film.
Yeah.
Mm. The propaganda film that features the Imperial March, which is hilarious.
I think it's a, like a riff on the Imperial March, not the Imperial March.
Yeah, no, it's a way more like goofy, sensational. Yeah.
It was the version. What was it? The not Joy to the Empire, whatever the fuck it was. The original the march they did for the rejected video game.
Right. Yes. I forget. But yeah, there was a piece of music that we uncovered.
An uplifting Imperial March.
Yeah.
And the, yeah.
In an earlier State of the Empire, we played a track from a Star Wars game that got canceled due to LucasArts being dissolved.
Right.
And they did have a really great version, a take on the Imperial March style that was like from the Imperial March as though from the perspective of the Imperials. So Colin Cantwell said on his Instagram, Colin Cantwell's the legendary Star Wars ship designer who also created the design that would become the Arrestor Cruiser. He said, "Bad news, everyone. The Arrestor Cruiser scene has been cut from Solo. I wasn't told the reasoning for this decision, but my ship will still be featured in a Solo book to be released soon. I hope they'll include the scene in the director's cut, as I was very much looking forward to seeing her fly." I don't believe there's a director's cut. I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's a very weird thing for him to say.
But interesting that there's a Solo book coming out with the Arrestor Cruiser in it. And if there was a scene with more Imperial stuff, then maybe that's where Tag and Bink went to. And interesting that would be a scene then that was filmed during the Ron Howard stuff.
I suppose it's possible they were on Mimban, maybe? No.
No.
No, it's just...
And it's possible that they were some Imperial folks on Dryden Voss's pleasure barge.
Yeah, that'd be a weird place for them.
Matt, you had a theory about Darth Maul and Dryden Voss and how these things might fit together in continuity a little bit that I wanted to circle back to.
Yeah, so there's a very obvious set of Mandalorian armor in Dryden's office,
mm-hmm.
and it looks red tinted,
mm-hmm.
like a red hued, and Darth Maul's like, when he takes over, when he establishes the Shadow Collective and the Mandalorian Death Watch is part of it, they all start to wear red and black armor like Darth Maul's tattoo markings.
Hmm.
And by the time of Son of Dathomir, when...
The comic that was the last thing released under Dark Horse before Marvel acquired the license, but mm-hmm. which was recently reprinted under the Marvel banner in November.
Right. He is broken out of kind of... imprisoned by Palpatine. That was the last time we saw him on Clone Wars. And then Death Watch breaks him out and broken out by a series of Mandalorian commandos that are wearing that red and black armor. Dryden Voss might be one of those commandos.
Hmm.
That might be his Mandalorian armor.
What's Dryden's species again?
I don't know if they've identified it yet. I'm sure it'll be in the...
So you may have noticed that his facial wounds like flare up and his eyes go red.
Yeah.
That could easily be like nerve damage of a kind. Like he could be as human or Mandalorian or whatever as anybody.
Too much spice.
But that it's like an affliction that's not a part of his biology.
Hmm.
Right.
Once he died, he like turned real pale and like really like
yeah, that was an interesting thing. Yeah. I noticed that this time around his body got real discolored after just a little bit.
Quickly. Yeah,
yeah, that's why I figured me that was like, oh, he's an alien.
In
like,
the only expanded universe, obviously Mandalorians were mostly Mandalorian and from Mandalore, but they didn't hesitate to bring into their tribal culture, you know, people that subscribe. I mean, there could be any number of alien Mandalorians in the old expanded universe, and you know, I think Mandalore was a very modern planet in Clone Wars, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, immigrants from other planets came to Mandalore and eventually, you know, adopted their culture. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that Dryden was one of he has a very Mandalorian name. I mean, I know it was mostly for like the Voss surname is, you know, used for Quinlan Voss, but like that sort of like, I don't know. It sounds like it would fit very well.
And where's Quinlan from?
He wasn't human either. I think he was Kifar.
Well, the Voss are also a species in Old Republic.
With two S's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my theory. When we get the Dryden comic, I'm sure we will. I would not be shocked if that's where they go with it.
So a question you asked, Matt, of in the prior episode is, what is the conflict on Mimban? What's going on there? Because Mimban's a very important planet in the expanded universe, obviously. And Mike and Mac told us, hey, there's not really much there. We don't know what's up. We know that it's like there's indigenous peoples and there's the Empire. Specifically, what we have based on some leaked material from Han Solo's source book is Mimban has been embroiled in conflict for decades, mostly due to mining operations. The native species, the Membanese, oppose off-worlders. The Empire is there to pacify the planet. The mining of Memban is indirectly the result of Tarkin's demand for increased military production.
And so Memban in the old expanded universe was the home of the kyber crystal that enhanced force power. Not like, you know, the kyber crystals that came out later, yeah. That are part of this current universe. So it would not surprise me if specifically they were mining kyber crystals for early Death Star work.
Yeah, for sure. Also, there's a weird thing that sort of like looped into this, the Memban trench warfare thing, which I think speaks to an interesting note about the Imperials and how they operate. Imperial medics employ arms against hostiles. The Empire justifies this through their interpretation of medical oaths, which dictate they should only protect their own species. In the case of the Empire, they are nearly entirely human. Now, we haven't seen any kind of establishment of the racism of the Empire in the new canon. Like, Thrawn, for example, is not hidden away until the Empire falls. He is a Chiss, and that's fine. So this is a weird little note of that.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I've never been a fan of that concept. Like, it kind of really came out when the movies were over.
Well, because they had to show why the Empire was bad, aside from blowing up, you know, a planet.
Like, I mean, I suppose, you know, but to me...
Like, fundamentally, why are they bad?
But to me, it wasn't an actual on-screen race thing that Imperials were mostly humans. It was a production thing.
Sure.
Because, guess what? Let's go back to the throne room scene in A New Hope. It is 100% humans everywhere celebrating the victory at Yavin.
Yeah, there's no aliens there.
There's no aliens. Is the Rebel Alliance as racist as the Empire? No, it was a production thing. They didn't have time to put alien creatures in the audience. It's just all humans. I never thought the Empire was like a pro-human race thing. To me, it's very heavy-handed and feels more Star Trek-ish to me. Like, that sort of heavy-handed sci-fi. That, like, humans are just, like...
Yeah, all the alien X-Wing pilots died in Rogue One, and they weren't there for New Hope. Like, I mean, could you imagine just, like, watching... If they did another special edition, New Hope, and then the middle of it's like, Red 5, standing by. It's like, Red 2, Gold Leader, standing by. And then just like some other alien. Who the fuck is that guy?
I do have to say, though, if I could go back and change some things about the special edition, it would be make Mos Eisley go back to the way it was, because... You know, it was cool. Now it's awful when they drive in and do that. I would add like an alien X-Wing pilot.
Sure.
Yeah. Or a woman X-Wing pilot.
Oh, that'd be cool.
or just pepper some aliens in that scene in Yavin. You know, like, why not? One last note from what sparse details we have pulled from these leaks from the whatever book these are from. Coaxium, the hypermatter fuel. Ancient spacefarers discovered coaxium in the organs of the Purrgil, which are the whale creatures we see in Rebels that have the hyperspace powers. They metabolize gases in space that creates the coaxium and allows them to travel through hyperspace. Which I think is an interesting...
It's cool.
Glad we got to the bottom of that.
Right? I mean...
Because I remember watching the end of Rebels being like, what the fuck? Like, this is how we end it? We don't... All right. I was like, I'll go with it. I don't care. Just it's fine.
So, what do you guys think the next film is? I mean, like, we got Obi-Wan, we got Boba Fett. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that we'll have threads that sort of connect these movies to some degree. I feel like Boba Fett's got to be taking place post Jedi because people want him to crawl out of the Sarlacc.
I know people want that, but what I want more than that is same time period as this. Younger-ish Boba Fett tracking down Mace Windu. I want him to track down...
That is an Inquisitor's job, Doug.
But they haven't done it. I want Boba Fett... No. I told you before. I know I must have said this on the show at some point. I want to begin with Boba Fett on a job.
Okay.
He finishes the job, and that's when, like, whoever his, like, one assistant is, because he always, you know, you always have to introduce whatever, because Jango Fett had Zam, so why the fuck not? You know, you have an assistant, he's like, all right, I just turned in this bounty. What's the next on the list? Oh, Bubba, yeah, there's a file popped up That you said if this name ever crossed my desk, I'd send it to you immediately. And this name just popped up. It's a Mace Windu is on this planet. He's like, say that again. Just like, and then he's got to go fucking take care of it. And the final showdown is between old Sam Jackson and Boba Fett.
No, I'm worried. Like, I'm worried that my eyes are gonna roll all the way back in the back of my head, and I'm not gonna get him back.
All right. Why?
I'll see that. I'll see that, and I'll raise you. Not the Boba Fett film, but he's the one who stirs Obi-Wan out of it. He's like, all right, man, we got to do this one last Jedi thing, though. And Mace Windu finally dies in the story of the Obi-Wan film.
Oh, so like Boba Fett comes in as like the
no, NPC. It's no fucking Boba Fett. Fuck Boba Fett. But like that Mace Windu and Obi-Wan Kenobi team up together in the Obi-Wan Kenobi film.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Last ride.
No, sure. Yeah, I would take that as well.
Matt's shaking his head.
I can't. Like, Mace is dead. As much as I love Mace
he's
is gone.
Not fucking dead, man.
He fell out a window. Everyone fell out of a window in Star Wars.
Darth Maul got cut in half and he did not die, fool.
Yeah.
But they can't do that more than like two or three times.
Mace just got flung, man. He's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Darth Maul didn't die, and Mace Windu was on the Jedi Council, so...
The Death Star has blown up, and it's come back twice.
Your argument is invalid. No,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. I would say everybody wants Boba Fett to walk out of the Sarlacc. I think the Boba Fett film, and I am stealing this a little bit from, I think, his story from Tales from Jabba's Palace. I think the Boba Fett film should be Boba struggling while being digested in the Sarlacc slowly over 1,000 years, but him recollecting his, like, you know, him growing up between A New Hope and, or between the prequels and, you know, maybe just like one particular job.
Uh-huh.
And then he works up the strength to just, like, you know, I don't
know.
Does
it start with the record scratch and be like, I bet you're wondering how I got in this mess. I mean, whatever. That's fine. But I think for like another Han Solo movie, if they have to shoehorn in Boba Fett, I would want them to be like, Boba Fett's not antagonistic towards him because he has no reason to be. So it's just sort of like, oh, that guy, he's a great bounty hunter, and they have to like work together to get out of a desperate situation.
What happens if they do? So we get an Obi-Wan film, we get a Boba Fett film, we'll get a
Lando. I want a Lando film.
A Lando film, and then they come out with a film about the big time gangster putting together a crew, and when
it's
they
Dexter
all get
Jester.
Together, no, it no, I mean, it's Jabba, clearly. But when Jabba puts together this crew, it's the stars of all of the Star Wars story films.
So it's like Ocean's
it's
11,
Lando,
but it's Lando,
Han,
Boba
Fett, somehow Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Cassian Andor, because he hasn't died yet.
That's great
our,
character.
That's our connection to Rogue One.
Mm. Eh. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because we got to have Cassian and Jabba in the same scene. That's that's important.
That is
he needs
to
discover the texture.
That is the only thing I want.
For the rest
of these movies.
Yeah, the only thing if you were to ask me, like, what like those are all what I think. What I actually would want is I want Boba Fett to kill Mace Windu, or I want Cassian Andor and Jabba somehow together. I don't care like how, but it just somehow.
With Cassian wearing the slave outfit, being chained, and smiling, like just beaming ear to ear.
It's like day 300 of my going undercover. They suspect,
and
nothing.
That's what they have to send someone to get him out because he's gone too deep.
That's like, then you watch Rogue One. He's just like, I've been in this fight since I was 12 years old. You don't know the things I've done.
I don't know what I want the Boba Fett film to be, other than not made.
Said the same thing about Solo. I said the same thing about Solo.
The real question is, let's be honest, it's not going to be Tamara Morrison. Like, it's just, it's not.
It's going to be Daniel Logan.
It's not going to be Daniel Logan.
No, it has to be Daniel Logan.
It's absolutely not going to be Daniel Logan.
The
real question is who is it going
to
be?
I think get Tamara Morrison to do the voice and just have anyone under the fucking helmet.
And don't
take the helmet off. Dude, pull a Dredd, Carl Urban and Dredd. Don't take the fucking helmet off. No one cares. No one wants to see his fucking face.
I would accept that. And by the way, I also wouldn't use Tamara Morrison. I would much rather use
Jeremy Bullock.
No, I was going to say
the
voice actor for Rex and the Clones. To me, by now, that is the voice of...
Yeah, no, you're right.
Clones. And that's a difficult thing I have, too, is, like, sometimes, like, even Anakin and Obi-Wan don't sound right to me because of Clone Wars. Oh, well, Obi-Wan, it's still Ewan, but, like, when I watch Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, like, first time when Hayden talks, it sounds a little bit off to me because
he's such a weird, lispy, whiny boy.
But Tamara Morrison did the voiceover for the special editions, right? Like
he did.
Yeah. So they gotta.
And you know what's funny is, not for the special editions. They
for the Blu-ray release, rather.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I dreaded that. Not that bad. Recently, though, it doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's worse changes, let's be honest. But I don't know. Boba Fett is a weird one, inevitable, as we've mentioned. But I don't know. It's going to be weird. Now timeline becomes the most important thing here. Like, what are they trying to create with this Darth Maul Crime Syndicate thing?
You know, whether people are hating on The Last Jedi or defending it or saying the new Solo movie is going to suck or saying, hey, give it a chance. All these people, you know what the one thing they say in common? That they want to actually see something in the Old Republic. They want to see something pre-prequels. I can only talk about what I've seen and I'm just one guy. I've only seen so much. But everybody seems to be in agreement of saying, I mean, in person, online,
I think
everywhere.
I think that's the Benioff and Weiss series.
Like the pre-prequels?
Yeah, the Game of Thrones guys doing the undetermined amount of movies, it's them, for sure.
Yeah, I think they're doing...
There was a strong indication of, like, Knights with a K.
And I think Rian Johnson will probably write and direct one movie and then some sort of, like, creative bow out, you know, like... I'm exhausted of Star Wars.
I've done two. That's more than I ever thought I would do. So I'm going to pass the baton to the next filmmaker who really wants to do it.
Mm-hmm. And where those takes place, I don't know.
Yeah, really hard to say. Really, really hard to say.
The real question is, are we about to move to two a year? Because I think they're going to save... You know, we know Episode 9 is coming in December 2019, and they have not given us definitive announcements on what these movies are in any way. We have Celebration 2019, you know, coming up in 2019. Are they going to start doing things like Marvel does, where they have this big, you know,
reveal?
Here's the new phase in the timeline.
Here's the thing. I was just going to ask: do they have to connect? I mean, where are they building towards? Do they have to build towards anything?
Except that it's Darth Maul,
because it says a Star Wars story. It's just a Star Wars story.
It's about anticipation, and that's the worst part. By the way, we mentioned earlier walking back on the Star Wars story moniker. This movie, unlike Rogue One, actually used it in the movie, in the title as
it's a Solo
Star Wars story. And I was like, what? They actually used that moniker in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like, that to me indicates like they are building something on this title.
I hope they're not going to be like, this is phase one, and now they're all going to be the Avengers of Star Wars. I really don't want that. I just want individual stories. I want you to be able to walk up to your bookshelf or your DVD shelf and say, you know what? I'm feeling the mood for this one, and not be like, we've got to have a marathon. We're going to watch them in order because it all leads up to the great conflict.
To be fair, I feel like the Marvel's done a good job having all their movies still stand on their own.
I couldn't agree more. I just think Marvel's doing one thing. I want Star Wars to do something else.
I think Star Wars has the possibility and likelihood of doing the more subtle version of it. Like, because what do we have in Solo? Just Maul. That's all.
Yeah.
So we have, like, a third plot thread that kind of runs throughout all this stuff, and then it ends up sort of tying things together a little bit more. That's fine.
So let's reset the clock with days that we've had a Star Wars movie without a lightsaber to zero.
And also... the only reason we're even on this line of questioning that it's not simply Maul's being set up for a Solo sequel is because Darth Maul is a Force user. We don't think Maul and Han could ever come across each other. Mm-hmm. So we're like, Maul's being saved for someone else.
For
a team up film, for something.
You know, I'll take back a little bit about what I said about having him be like useless, like it could have been anybody for his appearance of like talking to Kira. When he's just like, oh, you know who I work for, and it's like all dangerous. I'm like, who the fuck, whatever. And I didn't think they were ever going to answer it. But then in the end, when she's like all nervous and shit, and she's making that phone call, it's like, if it was never going to be Jabba, because Jabba's like low-level criminal compared to this shit. But like, if it was anyone,
right,
it would have been like, oh, I'm not that scared. I don't really know who you are or whatever. Or if it was Snoke, you know, heaven forbid, you know. but when it's Darth Maul.
I would have walked out.
Yeah. But if it was Darth Maul, it's like, oh, I actually am kind of scared of that guy, because like I know what he's capable of. I know he's vicious, and he looks scary. Yeah. So it's like, it's enough of it to make me go, oh yeah, she doesn't want to piss off that guy.
Yeah.
So I'll give it that. You know?
Yeah, no, they did a great job in setting him up subtly without, so, like...
If he's just the Blofeld, you know, to Solo, where they never have to necessarily cross paths.
But eventually Blofeld and him do cross paths. And that's the thing. Like I said, if it was anyone else, they're just setting up a sequel for Solo.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a Force user, and because we know Han is very ignorant about the Force, and he's very poo-poo about
it. Doesn't believe in it.
Yeah. It's not...
He says I've never seen anything to make me believe in any all-powerful Force anymore.
It's not being set up for him. Yeah. And here's the thing, though. Kira's story with Han is not done yet.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, she is the key to getting him to become the person that we met in A New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, so... And
she's going to have to disappoint him.
I mean, she has quite a...
She has already, but yeah. He's like, no, I know you. I know you. Oh, she's leaving now, but I know. And it's like, she's going to have to, like, actually go, like, bad. Like,
well, she's gonna die. I mean, yeah. She'll die for him.
Yeah, but if she dies for him, it'll be like, well, I was right, but now I'm sad now. Yeah. I'm just sad guy with dead girlfriend. It's like, that's not... so much.
I think it'll be more like Casino Royale with the bitch is dead.
Yeah, if they go that route, yeah. Fine. Yeah. Cool.
I feel like it's already there. Like, so this movie did such a great job of establishing
Martin Solo. Campbell to do the next Solo.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
That'd be so cool.
I would lose my mind. But I feel like all the pieces are there. This movie has no right being as good as it is, but it is fan-freaking-tastic. I can't wait to see it again. Mm-hmm. When next you hear from us, we'll have seen it in 4DX. We'll have flown on the Falcon before Galaxy's Edge even drops anchor. So I'm super excited for it, for everything to come, and for seeing Solo again, because there's so much there. I think that this movie is going to keep on giving for years to come. I can't imagine getting tired of it. So, Ron, well done.
Great job.
You did it. Like, you fucking did it, man. I'm so thrilled by Solo. I never, ever, 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 ever thought I was going to be.
Yeah. Like I said, it's like a meta commentary on the character of Solo.
Mm-hmm,
just like,
mm-hmm.
How did you pull that off, you son of a bitch?
It's well, it's as a lot of people have pointed out, it's Kira's line in the yacht. Rough around the edges, but good.
Yeah.
So before we head out, I want to thank you for listening. And if you like what you heard, if you like this episode, if you like what we do, please do consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes. Just a moment of your time can mean the world to us. For example, we got a brand new 5-star review by Professor Goof, a.k.a. David, who said, "It can take a while to wade through all the Star Wars podcasts out there. If you don't mind an occasional F-bomb, this is, hands down, the best. Often insightful, intelligent, and yes, entertaining. A must for Star Wars nerds. A great place to start for the curious. Keep up the great work. I always look forward to the alert of a new episode." Thanks, David. That is amazing. If you have a review like that, please do post it up. If you just want to leave a rating because it's faster and easier, that's fine. That's totally cool. Please do. And if you'd like to rate and review specific episodes, then sure, you could rate the series on iTunes. That's extra helpful. But maybe also try Podchaser, which is a great platform for podcast discovery. You can rate and review specific episodes there. And also, iTunes is actually country-specific. So if you're rating us outside the United States, I could dial in. I could key in a specific country and then look us up and see if anyone's posted anything there. But that I wouldn't know to look for it. I would have no idea. So if you have posted a review in another country, let us know. We'll track it down. Or you can send it to us, whatever, on iTunes. But we'd love to read it. And thank you. That's awesome. But Podchaser is the optimal user experience. It is an international marketplace for podcast rating interviews. It's for everybody. So maybe consider that as well.
And you can read individual episodes.
Right. You should definitely check out our Willow Watch specials if you haven't yet. We've done a re-release of our interview with Bob Dolman, the screenwriter for Willow. It is super insightful. He tells all kinds of amazing stories of working with Ron Howard and George Lucas and Joseph Campbell.
And no bullshit, I'm going to go back and re-listen to it, having just seen Solo and seen, like, even more, how much does it compare? Because I'm sure there's going to be something in there. There's going to be a nugget in there, I'm sure of it.
We also, celebrating Willow's 30th anniversary, are putting out a ton of new Willow Watch episodes all year long, and we have a brand new episode, which is we have chronicled the journey to Willow 2, since Ron just said there are actual talks happening of some degree right now, and there's been all kinds of weird rumors about Willow 2 over the years, as well as our own rampant humorous and sometimes very serious speculation about that. So we've been doing Willow Watch segments for the past 6 years here on State of the Empire. They're all locked away in various episodes. It's been a journey for us, and now we're compiling that journey into bite-sized episodes, which will eventually culminate in brand new Willow Watch experiences and interviews and so on. The sky's the limit, so get excited. And if you would like to give us a financial contribution, well, we are still produced by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. That's the studio we're recording in right now. If you want to help us, you know, maintain our facilities and pay the rent here that allows us to do this recording, and in fact, a lot of the in-house recording for the Consequence Podcast Network, then please do consider donating even a dollar to nerdyshow.com/support. You can go on there. There's our Patreon link, patreon.com/nerdyshow. You can give a one-time donation. It helps a lot. And if you do donate via Patreon, we have a ton of State of the Empire outtakes and bonus perks, and we're in the middle of compiling some other stuff. I don't know. We have to generate stuff that we discard, but we'll have material for a new outtake collection soon, probably. So that's it. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time, and I don't know what the hell we're gonna talk about. There's no Star Wars movies until 2019.
That's why we got to start going to the Lucasfilm backlog.
Oh, that's
doing
true.
Tucker, Radioland Murders,
Howard the Duck,
yeah, Red Tails,
Strange Magic.
Oh yeah.
And a little movie that we didn't know existed, an animated feature from the early 80s called Twice Upon a Time.
Yes,
a Lucasfilm project.
Mm-hmm.
Also put out by the Ladd Company, who the only other thing I know who they've done is Blade Runner,
right?
So I recently acquired a copy of that. So yes, this State of the Empire is a Lucasfilm podcast.
We got to cover
it. There's going to be plenty of Star Wars news in the interim, I'm sure. But yeah, we're going to be spending some time with some other Lucasfilm properties. So hopefully you'll join us for this journey that even diehard fans have never been on in some cases. Let us know what you think of Solo. Don't forget, use the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group to safely have your discussions about this film, which maybe everyone you know has not seen yet. That's exactly what that place was made for.
Yeah, when you want to go on your main Facebook feed and post, oh my God, Darth Maul, and you can't do it in public, go
You
ahead.
Know where to go. Star Wars Spoilers on Facebook. See you next time.
State of the Empire is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequencesound.net. This show is recorded and produced in Orlando, Florida at Nerdy Show Studios, home of the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. Discover more at nerdyshow.com. Our theme song, Maximum Rebo, was written and performed by Xantilla. Find more awesome tracks at xantilla.bandcamp.com. Special thanks to our Bothan pals in the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group, the Nerdy Show Network Patreon backers, and Boofy Ra, Lando's original droid co-pilot. I heard Lando say L3 and he met the Shuru. But I still remember that you were along for that mission, Boofy. And I'm not forgetting anytime soon.
Consequence Podcast Network.